This is Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Carol Masser. Welcome to the Bloomberg Business Week Extra. It's our weekly podcast bringing you an in-depth interview you'll not hear anywhere else. Lee Forster is the CEO of Neat.
Well, and I loved catching up with him in part because we talk a lot about the world of fitness, the world of wellness. This is a guy, former Olympic athlete, coming at the world of food from a very different perspective.
Yeah. A holistic perspective.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning because you walk into the studio and it's pretty clear you're an athlete. And then we find out in our research that you're not just an athlete. You're a Olympic level swimmer. So take us back to that and what you learned about what happened next just from being a high level athlete.
It's a fascinating career to have because it's a career that's fundamentally quite short. You know, you retire at a very young age. Most people are retiring in their 20s, maybe into their 30s. It teaches you a hell of a lot of discipline. And I think that the discipline element of that is something that's been so transferable moving out of that. But it's a difficult transition because you're so identified by this thing for so many years and it's such a part of your life that when you come to leave that behind, a lot of people, and we work with a lot of charities now, and it's this idea of feeling lost.
Yeah.
You know, what do I do next? What do I go on to? Where do I place all of this energy that has had a bolt focus to be exceptional at one thing? And I think that was a really interesting transition for me, you know, replacing that void that came from leaving this career behind at such a young age.
You say interesting. Interesting can go a lot of different ways. Interesting good, yeah. Interesting bad. I mean, was it hard?
Yeah, it's hard. It's very hard. And I think a lot of people shy away from talking about how hard it is.
Yeah.
And I think it does go both ways. And you see people that have both ends of the spectrum and very few that land in the middle. You know, you get some people that really, really struggle with that transition because they haven't necessarily thought about what is next.
Mm. Had you thought about what was next as you were doing your swimming?
I think I knew that I wanted something different. I didn't want to stay within the sport. I knew I wasn't going to go and be a coach. And that was something that kind of led me to want to carry on thinking about what might be next. No idea what it was going to be, for sure. I didn't really know where that path would take me, but I knew I had a passion and an appetite for success and wanted to place that somewhere, and had continued down a path that allowed me to get a very good education while combining that with my sport career, which is quite unusual increasingly these days. Certainly as if you look in Europe, it's a very different market that doesn't kind of place the same emphasis that you maybe see in the US with the kind of NC2A side of what you can do around university. So it was an idea that I wanted to go and do something, but I didn't know what that something was.
Well, and as you say, on the positive side, you are bred with unbelievable discipline, the ability to set goals and achieve them, to stick with something, to sort of work through pain and suffering and all sorts of setbacks. And so how did you decide what to do next? Because you didn't go straight to the company you have now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very lucky that I had a really diverse network of people that comes from that. You know, you meet a lot of very interesting people that have done a lot of interesting things. And I tried to look to people who had successfully transitioned out of their sport and their career there. And I went into consulting, you know, a fairly well-trodden and arguably quite traditional and stable path, but it appealed to me, the kind of, you know, the desire that you're always trying to understand something better and improve and help other people improve was something that I really loved. And, you know, forged a very successful career in that, you know, saw me running a commercial strategy business on the boutique side of healthcare and medtech, but still always had this itch and this desire to go back into something that I knew so well. And I'd always kind of said I wanted to go back into it when I felt I could offer something. You know, I didn't want to go into it just because.
All right. So how did you get to the point of creating Neat Nutrition?
Yeah, I am a very good friend of mine that I co-founded the business with. We'd met each other way back when we first started out in our swimming careers. And we'd both always had this idea. And going into what I call the kind of more traditional workplace, it coincided with a time where everyone was looking to the next adventure. You know, it was about the next adventure race, the next triathlon, the next cycling race or marathon or whatever it was. And people were really starting to embrace this idea of health and wellness. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I get this. You know, this is something I really understand. And both of us looked at it, and there was this huge disconnect between the quality of information and how people were getting that information and products that were going along with it versus what they were trying to achieve. And it was very much, you know, this idea that it was all about how much you lift in a gym, and fitness and supplementation was just centered around that. But actually, the growing and emerging part of the market was this trend of wanting to have health and wellness integrated into your life rather right. than the extremes.
Well, and that's a really important point. We've mm-hmm. talked a lot about mm-hmm. this notion that exercise and fitness went from essentially something you did to who you were, yeah. and it became a lifestyle in a lot of ways. So how did you sort of pick out the area of that lifestyle you wanted to focus on?
Yeah, and I think we actually talk about our business as being in lifestyle nutrition because it is, as you say, it's that all-encompassing, whether you are, you know, whether it's putting on your yoga pants and going down and doing a class and then getting a smoothie afterwards, through to someone who's training for their next event. It's this idea that it identifies you. Mm-hmm. And increasingly I was living in London and spending a lot of time between New York and LA, and you increasingly saw this generation of people who it was all about these bite-sized, very customized, personalized experiences with boutique fitness and the rise of that. And, you know, as you say, it's these tribes and these little communities that start identifying by how they're working out or how they're spending time with their friends was evolving, you know, and the kind of the joke that you were more likely to see someone at the bar, as in a ballet bar, as you were at a bar. And, you know, I saw it in the grads that were coming through when I was working in my old job. You know, the hangovers were going down on a Thursday and Friday morning, and they were more likely to have come from a yoga class and
right.
and had their breakfast and walked into the office. And, you know, it was this real evolution of how people were thinking and identifying.
So tell us about your product, right? Because it's a supplement, right?
Yes.
It's all natural. So tell me exactly what it is and what's kind of your business model here.
Yeah, so we wanted to, you know, our mission was really to go out there and produce a great tasting, all natural and very easy to understand product. You know, the market and the supplements market has historically been a myriad of quite difficult yeah. things to understand. And
with not
quite
a lot
often,
of standards out there, right? Or oversight either.
Right, exactly. So quite often been caught up and embroiled in ideas of misclaiming or claims that weren't true to what the product was. And we wanted to really shake that up and simplify things. You know, make it something that was really easy for people to understand. You could turn over a packet, you knew what was in there, it was natural ingredients. And really, you know, it doesn't sound like it shakes things up, but it was really a different direction to take things. And we then wanted that to be underpinned by this idea of personalization. You know, people are the class pass generation that are personalizing everything they do in their health and wellness, whether that's the smoothie they're having or the class they take. We wanted that personalization there as well. So looking at allowing people to be in control of what they were buying and putting that together for them.
What does that mean? Like, so for Jason, you might, the supplement it's personalized to him in terms of the type?
Yeah. So you go onto the website, and it's this idea that it doesn't have to be just this one thing. You know, you're not buying a 4-pound tub that you put in your kitchen and never use. You know, it's
everybody's
exactly.
Everybody's
And you forget about it. And it's not, you know, where if you've got your family and someone wants something that's vegan and someone wants something that's not plant-based, and, you know, looking at this idea that actually taking these bite-sized chunks, understanding what you really want. Mm-hmm. And variety is quite often the thing that was missing for people when we spoke to our customers. So you can go on there, you can personalize exactly what you want. It comes in individual sachets that are designed to be easy, whether you're traveling. You know, again, that's a big market that's never been looked at. You know, we had a lot of people using our product, myself included, that's traveling all the time. Yeah. You don't want to be decanting things and right. thinking about these big tubs. And it's designed to be a very easy subscription that turns up at your door at your frequency and your control.
And so who are you competing with? Because one of the after effects, or one of the effects, I should say, of this movement that we've been discussing is there are a lot of people going yeah. after mm-hmm. this. You talk about the boutique fitness world. It feels like, to some extent, we may be hitting, dare I say, like peak boutique, or at least a peak. Who are you running up against that's also vying for that customer?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because I think what we still see, the market is huge, as you mentioned at the beginning, and it's growing. And people are still fighting for the same shelf space in the same high street retail, and there's more products going into that. And there, you know, there's not been much innovation or disruption in the market. So this idea of convenient at-home delivery and tailoring it more to you, there are entrants starting to come, and like everything, you know, fast followers or bigger companies looking to diversify. But as yet, we're not seeing a huge shift of our competitors moving into this space, and they're still vying for and fighting for that very traditional retail space that is overcrowded. Yeah. You know, it is a fight to get your product on shelf and get people buying it.
Well, Lee, how do you define yourself? I mean, when I was doing some research, I'm like, are you a wellness company, nutritional, a diet company, a supplement company? What's your market?
Yeah, so we really want to look at ourselves as being a lifestyle business. You know, we have a product.
It reminds me so much of, we talk a lot to Mindy Grossman, formerly of, she's with what used to be called Weight Watchers, now WW.
Yeah.
That whole idea of it's a lifestyle brand.
Yeah, and it is a lifestyle. And we've made some really important partnerships to really bring it into lifestyle. So yes, there's a product, but one of the other things that really underpins us as a business is we're a big content producer. You know, we talk about mental health, we talk about physical health, we talk about training, we talk about how you start training, how you train at an elite level, and we have all of these different series and different ideas because it is about lifestyle, you know, because you also have these other emerging things that are really important to incorporate. You know, we talk about mental health a lot because it is important. And a lot of this idea that it's just about fitness and how you look can be really detrimental to that side of things. So we are a more encompassing platform. We've had some really great partnerships. You know, we work globally with Lululemon, you know, so that gives you the idea of where we're setting our stall out and how we see ourselves playing.
How much, talk to us a little bit about, we're Bloomberg, we love financial. Give us an idea of, in terms of growth of the top and bottom line, revenue growth, earnings growth, are you profitable?
Yeah, so we are still in a period of growth. So what we're aiming for profitability by the end of this year.
And how many years have you been around?
So we've been around for 3 years.
3 years, right. Okay.
So we're aiming for profitability by the end of this year. On average, we've seen a fantastic growth. You know, we're growing, at the minute, we're growing somewhere between 16 and 20% per month.
16 and 20.
Month. Mm-hmm. Which is a great trajectory, and it's, you know, part of it has been the launch and the evolution into moving into the US, and also the appetite. You know, we've got a lot of organic traffic of people referring their friends, going, "Hey, this is a great business," and you know, that's a great stand for us, where it's people that are referring off the back of enjoying using our product, and that growth has then started to come really quickly off the back of it.
And so tell us about your typical customer, because one of the things we've seen in this market is this idea that this is a relatively affluent trend. It sort of certainly skews to a higher demo, seems to skew a little more female, especially if we're thinking about boutique fitness and whatnot. What are you seeing in terms of who your typical customer is?
Yeah, we've actually got a really quite unique split. We're about 50-50. So we do sit on that precipice of, you know, there's still a lot of people that use it as a convenient thing when they're really in the fitness side of the market. But the wellness side and the growth of that wellness side, we're actually seeing a lot of customers come in who quite often haven't used a product before.
Ah.
So we've got a lot of new entrants who are looking to try something out. And again, we offer that great because you can have this bite-sized starting point. You know, we're less than $10 to get a trial of all of the products that we offer versus, you know, if you walk into a Whole Foods or buying a larger product, you get to try one product in one flavor and, you know, your buy-in price is 10 times higher. So we get a lot of new customers. We do see that similar trend. You know, you are looking at that fairly affluent customer who is traveling. You know, they are in that boutique fitness scene, but also we've got an interesting mix of people who are coming into it who probably don't fit that typical mix that you would expect to see, because actually when you look at the cost per serving, you know, we're roughly £1.50 in the UK and $2 in the US, just under. So actually the cost of a serving is really not that high, and people are using it to really supplement a healthy diet when they are on the go. So it's not just being limited to that affluent customer you would expect to see that's associated with that boutique fitness movement.
I'm also sort of intrigued by the direct-to-consumer model too, that we've seen, you know, whether it's Harry's or Mack Weldon or Warby Parker, you know, all of these different brands. When you look across the landscape of that sort of D2C, who do you seek to emulate in that regard?
I've always been a big fan of Harry's, and you mentioned it there, and Dollar Shave Club as well, when they came out and really disrupted the market. And I think that the interesting thing with what they did was they really, you know, they found their tribe. You know, they knew who it was that wanted that convenience, that ease, and a better product. And that's what we really strive to do, because there is a huge marketplace of people out there who are looking to be engaged more. You know, the type of product that we have, being very blunt, historically has been incredibly transactional.
Yeah.
You know, no one really talks about it, because you're walking in, you're saying, I need that. It's part of my life. I'm going to stick it in a cupboard and that's me done.
I'm going to grab a protein bar or whatever, maybe.
Exactly. And we really want to create that community. And again, that's been the whole ethos of why we've got all of this value add alongside it. You know, it's looking at, I also I think WeWork's a fantastic example as well in a slightly different context, because, you know, For pure just comparative office space, it's expensive. But if you ever hover over that button to say, I want to unsubscribe from my WeWork office, you know the list of 100 things that you're also saying goodbye to. And all of the network effect and being part of this collective and having all of the value add stuff. You know, and it's that idea of creating something that's more than just a product.
I have to ask you, though, because I find this whole market of supplements fascinating, and it's a huge market, right? And there's lots of choices out there, and we're constantly talking about it. But I do wonder about, I mean, whether it's the FDA or whether it's UK regulators, there's not a lot of rules or standards about what you or any other player within this industry is providing, or whether or not you substantiate and prove the claims about whatever you're offering. So do you think there needs to be more oversight so that the market gets separated among the folks that what they say this is going to do actually proves true? I mean, what do you think needs to be done within this marketplace?
I'd love more regulation.
Would you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I come from a background prior to this where I worked in pharmaceutical and med tech, you know, and heavily, heavily regulated. And, you know, with that regulation comes an ability, if you are sticking true to your principles, to which we are, it gives you that separation. Mm. It gives you a natural separation. I'm, you know, by no means anyone in our office is ever scared of anything more than wanting more regulation, because it does help. It does help to weed out the idea that this kind of quick fix product over here that is marketed so well is actually not what it says it is. You know, that gives, you know, that gives us even more room to grow in this market. And I like the idea of that. You know, we stick to a very tight set of principles that we want to hold ourselves to.
Right.
So we're quite happy with increased regulation and looking across all of that market. You know, we've done some really interesting things as well. We partner directly with our supply chain. So we're one of very few businesses globally that have actually got access directly to our ingredient suppliers and know the provenance and the supply chain of where everything is coming from, because it is so important to us. And we have this idea where it's, you know, we want this kind of global business and global delivery, but with local supply, because it is important if you're buying this out in California that you know that it's, you know, there's a low food journey, there's good provenance, and it's a local supply chain.
Do you talk to regulators in the UK and the US? I mean, do you see that there's any kind of movement that there will be more oversight?
It's a difficult one, because I think if you look down the scale of what the FDA are looking at and what the importance factors are where supplements come, it's always going to be trending towards the bottom of the pile.
Yeah.
I think the
but meanwhile, the pile grows and grows and grows, and the claims grow and grow and grow.
And I think that's the interesting one, because I do think that has to shift. Yeah. The rate of growth, the sheer volume of people entering this space, it has to become more on the radar, and it has to be looked at more. You know, we talk to them in isolation, but it's very difficult even to have that conversation and start that process moving. So I think it will have to change. I don't think it's set to change anytime soon, being very honest, because I just think there are, ultimately, they look at it as having bigger fish to fry. So it's an interesting one. For me, I'd love it.
That was Lee Forster, the CEO of Neat.
You've been listening to Bloomberg Business Week Extra.
Be sure to tune in to Bloomberg Business Week Radio live Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. This is Bloomberg.